Welcome to the Health and Self-Care Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Tresidder, a Somerset doctor, and I'm pleased to be joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Peter Bagshaw, also a Somerset GP.
And two more friends from elsewhere in Britain, slightly further north than sunny Somerset, but very pleased to see Karen and Chrissy, Dr. Karen Shaw and Chrissy Mowbray, both of whom you've kindly been on our podcast before. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Can you just tell us a little bit about each of you, please, about yourselves?
I'm Chrissy Mowbray. I am a physiotherapist, psychotherapist, hypnotherapist and practitioner of NLP and all sorts of other alternative medicines or complementary medicines in Pontefract.
Sorry, can I just butt in and ask you to unpack NLP for our listeners, please?
You can. It's neuro-linguistic programming, which was developed in the 1980s, sort of on the back of the CBT stuff, but it's around the connections between emotions and the words that we use. And so we will always use words that convey more than, and if you actually harness that, if you deliberately use words that convey certain things, you have maximum impact with your messaging. So it's used a lot in sales and coaching and health promotion and in therapy as well.
And again, just for our listeners, in kindly unpacking NLP, you introduced CBT, another acronym. So that's cognitive behavioral therapy, which is sort of the standard talking therapy that we use now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, absolutely. Very commonly used in the NHS and outside of it as well.
I'm Karen Forshaw, a GP from Doncaster in South Yorkshire. So at the practice, I'm a GP partner and a GP trainer. And then outside of the practice, I'm a GP appraiser. And I'm the clinical director of one of the networks, which is kind of the new way that we're working in general practice to try and collaborate between practices, really. And then the other part of my job is to work with Chrissy doing something what we call resilient practice, which is a way to share the kind of tools and techniques that we use in our everyday jobs with patients and for ourselves to make sure that people are okay, because we really passionately believe that if people aren't okay, then their work doesn't go properly and their home life doesn't go properly and they're unhappy. So the key to happiness is actually self-awareness for us.
I would fully endorse that, and I hope you're doing well and successful, because the NHS is the biggest employer in the country, over 1 million employees. If all of us who work for the NHS are happy and healthy and doing our best and resilient, then everybody's going to get a better benefit from it. But unfortunately, it seems that health professionals aren't necessarily good at looking after themselves. And there are other problems that we'll come on to in a minute. I'm just going to give us a plug for your book, because I reread it recently, Chrissy and Karen, Karen and Chrissy, How to Rise, a Complete Resilience Manual. And I love it. There's so much wisdom in there, so much eternal wisdom, as well as common sense wisdom that you've brought in from recently. What a lot of waffle I've gone through in order to get to our title. So we're going to talk today about bullying behaviour. Thank you very much, listeners, for bearing with us. Bullying behaviour. Karen, if you'd like to start, what is bullying behaviour?
So that's such a brilliant question. And Chrissy and I had a conversation about this morning when we were preparing for what we were going to say today. And I was like, right, well, we need to find a definition. So I was looking up kind of different definitions. And when people do research on bullying, they talk about intentional behavior that causes harm to another person. Actually, we then got into a real discussion, didn't we, Chrissy? Because actually, how do you know whether somebody intends something or not? And actually, if you have intention as a key part of your definition of something, then actually that allows people, doesn't it, to say, well, I didn't intend that really. And so for it not to be. And sometimes people do things and say things, don't they? And it is taken in a wrong way by somebody else, actually. And it wasn't intended. But actually, that can still be bullying, can't it? Because the other person is potentially harmed by it. So actually, we want to go for a much wider definition, really, of bullying. And actually, maybe not worry so much about whether it's bullying or not, but actually, what does the person do about it? Because that is the key, isn't it? Because the only way that we can overcome something is if we understand what's going on for us within that situation, realistically. Would you add anything to that, Chrissy?
No, I think that's absolutely right. And I think the problem with flagging up that you feel bullied is it's entirely subjective. So when you start putting a definition there and it doesn't fit the definition, that kind of invalidates how that person feels and almost suggests that we're not going to take you seriously. So we have to go from when somebody feels a certain way, we have to go from how they feel and what was it about the behavior, and we have to unpick it and get some real clarity and take the emotions out. I think it's really important. Although people do need therapy, they do need the healing, they need the wound addressing, but then it needs to be when you're actually flagging up that there's been a problem and you're looking at the other person's behavior, you've got to be clear about what the issue was so that everybody understands what was and wasn't appropriate.
I think you've raised a really important point there, that we, what to some person would just be being directive and forceful and encouraging might be perceived as bullying by other people. And I wonder, can we agree a definition? You've already said that you want to make it wider. What's the link between, for instance, coercive control that we've become familiar with in the last few years?
Coercive control. Well, that is, yeah, I mean, that is that intentional, though? I would say coercive control is fully intentional, isn't it? Somebody is often putting another person in a position and they're doing it with the full intent of knowing the outcome that they want from that. So that would definitely fall into my definition of bullying, that's for sure. Yeah.
And yeah. Do you know why it arises? What makes people... bullies. I know lots of people who've been bullied, but I know very few people who say they're bullies. So do we know what the mindset is of somebody who bullies?
Go on, Chrissy. I'll let you get that.
I was going to say, just to go back to your coercive control, there are so many different ways that people can feel bullied, even if they have a manager who's making fun, who's making light, who's jesting with them. Sometimes that can feel like bullying, and that's definitely not intentional. And the reason, David, you don't know anybody who admits to being a bully is because most people think that's not what they're doing. Sorry, Peter, I got your name wrong. Apologies for that. So people don't feel that there's intention there. They don't feel that they've done anything wrong, because actually we don't look inward and we don't feel that's what we're doing. We actually just think that we're manipulating the situation to get a better outcome. So coming down to why people become bullies, I think it's when they feel out of control, if they feel that they're not very good at setting boundaries, that they are not able to get a department room, they feel like they've got to keep control of everybody in a sort of an iron fist kind of way, and they only have the skill that they have learned to in their arsenal to do that. So they're drawing on skills that they learned in childhood, maybe growing up. As managers, often we get into that position through experience and not through being taught how to behave towards people. And then there is the thing where you take a dislike to somebody, or somebody irritates you, somebody bothers you, and you want them to stop and you want them to behave a different way. And that's usually because we're seeing something in somebody that we recognize in ourselves that we don't like. The universe behaves like a mirror. We notice things about people that we don't like in ourselves, or that we have been brought up to be irritated by. And our behavior will then just suddenly become kind of a bit... unconscious, and we will snap at people or use jest or use kind of slippery ways of getting people to stop doing it. And then it all gets very messy and unclear, and people's emotions get involved, and then the waters get very muddy.
It is interesting. I heard somewhere that we're all guided by best intention, and of course we all have our own needs, and perhaps when we hurt inside, it's easy to hit out. When we don't hurt inside, we probably don't have a need to hit out or to control. Jill Edwards writes that we have three primary needs. One is to feel safe. Another is to feel loved. And the third is to feel in control. And by that, she doesn't mean in control of other people, but just in control of ourselves and our surroundings. And I just would be interested on your takes, because you're experts in this area and have done quite a lot of teaching on it. What you think about those comments, those insights?
I would absolutely agree with that. I personally think that most bullying probably comes from a place of fear. Yeah. And really all negative emotions and behaviors generally come from that place, don't they? So people can be afraid of not seeming to be in control, and that makes them be more aggressive or more coercive in the workplace or at home. People might feel that, you know, they are they might feel that their worth is connected to what other people think of them, and that leads to different kinds of behaviors, doesn't it? And as Chrissy said, it's all about when our emotions are dictating our behaviors, that in an unconscious way, then actually we will say and do things that actually may well be bullying behaviors.
So if somebody feels that they're being bullied, what in whatever way, what practical strategies can they take to try and stop this? And because it can be very difficult, can't you, when you're in that situation? By definition, you have less power, you're worried that it might escalate if you raise it. What are the practical steps that we can take if we feel bullied?
We controversially often teach that when you say you feel sad about something or upset or threatened, it's very easy for somebody to say, well, that's not what I meant at all. You're just overreacting or to invalidate your feelings. But if you talk about the behavior that somebody has exhibited, so for example, I was the sarcasm was not appropriate for the situation, or making fun was not appropriate for the situation. If you actually not actually judging the person, but judging the behavior or saying that the behavior was not appropriate for the situation takes the emotion out. So you can be clear. So I think with colleagues who come to you and say, I feel really bullied by this person, or this thing happened and it made me feel X, Y, Z, actually, what was it about the behavior that you didn't like? Because we have to be clear about, you know, just saying I feel like, or, you know, it's a tone of voice, or it's very, very worrying, because this subject is so subjective, and because the definitions are so wide, and it's very different, and so it's so difficult to say what bullying is. You have to agree what behavior is and is not appropriate within a certain workplace or within a certain environment, and that everybody feels comfortable. And when you've clarified that, you're taking the how you felt about it is up to you. That's where you go away and do your own healing. If something triggered you, then there's clearly work to be done in terms of resilience. But that doesn't change the fact that the behavior may or may not have been appropriate. And so I think when somebody's flagging it up, you empower them by saying, actually, yeah, giving them the compassion, but saying, what was it? And let's discuss why that might be inappropriate in the workplace and so on. Do you have anything? What did you want to say, Karen, about that?
I was going to do a step by step. So for me, it would be about actually, we need to make sure that people are comfortable in talking about this kind of thing in departments, in the groups that they're in, because bullying just doesn't happen in the workplace, does it? It happens at home, it happens at school. So actually, people need to be aware of the kind of policies that are set in the organizations that they're in. They need to understand who they can talk to. I really like a buddy system in an organization. So I think if organizations don't have those, anybody listening who's thinking about what can I do to improve my organization, and I would say have that kind of mentoring buddy system in place, because that does help about it. And also be really prepared to be open about this. One of the things that we always advocate is a team rule book, because if you want the communication in your department to be really clear, and everybody that's in the department needs to have sat down and talked about what we will and won't accept in our department. So, you know, you can be really clear at the beginning when people come in an induction and say, misogyny is not acceptable in this department. Racism is not acceptable in this department. You know, making fun of people is not acceptable in this department. Touching people inappropriately. And then you could even define what touching inappropriate, you know, can't you? You can be really clear. Some people like to hug and touch and other people don't. So we can be really, really clear with everybody who's involved about what is acceptable behavior. And then that's so easy then to actually address it and say, can I just bring you back to the rule book? Because that behavior is not acceptable in our department. And that just allows, and people then are much more able, whereas if you said, well, you're a bully or you're a racist or you're a misogynist, that's actually quite an aggressive way to deal with people, isn't it? And there's often people will come back with, well, I didn't mean it really. And so it becomes about your perception then that's the issue rather than the behavior itself.
It's interesting. Well, that's a really interesting point, Karen and Chrissy. Where does that bring us organizationally if we think about values, both positive values and negative values? Do they underpin it? Are they useful to define? I love that idea of specific rules and agreed between a group of people, but so often people come together for one or two meetings and so they won't have read the rule book or... speaking as a doctor, I think doctors are very good at breaking all sorts of rules. And I'm, listeners, please, I'm not talking about being sexual deviants or anything strange like that. I'm just saying that independent thinkers with a level of power tend to try and do their best and unwittingly break rules without realizing it. So how do we sort of formalize that in a bigger scenario or a bigger area for organizations, whether it's values or something like that?
I think it's those, obviously you will have friends in departments who will touch each other and other people won't. I think you have to start with some kind of a framework that can be flexible and can be in certain circumstances that people do break rules because you're autonomous, aren't you? And in some cases, some things are okay. And in some cases, they're not. Go on, Pete. So what did you want to say?
No, I was wanting to endorse what you said, Chrissy, and Karen as well, about focusing on the behavior, the specific behavior rather than the person. And I think that's actually very important, not just in terms of bullying, but in general. So it's something I was taught as a parent, is that if you say to a child, you are naughty, then they can't do anything with that. That doesn't help them. But if you point out the specific behavior that you want them to change, then that allows them to deal with that without feeling judged. So I think, you know, the point you've made is a really important one outside bullying as well as within bullying.
And someone who's accused of bullying, will defend themselves if they are called a bully or told that they've been bullying. Whereas if I was told that somebody felt bullied by me, I would want to know, what did I do? What was the behaviour that upset you? Because I would want to put that right, because I would not want to be seen as that kind of manager. And I think that stops people from being defensive. So you're not making a judgmental comment about them, you're just saying there's something about their management style that might need changing.
So thank you. Transactional analysis is about the three persona we can have. Adult and an adult-adult relationship is equal power. Parental takes the power, child gives the power away, or the power is taken from them. And the bullying-bully relationship, it will be a parental-child one, so unequal power. How do we help somebody become adult when they've been over-parental? And how do we help someone become adult when they've been in the child role so that they can find the strength just to be a strong person? Because we all know that from the playground, the bullies pick on not everybody, just a few or one or two. And they may not even realise they're bullying.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I would take it a step further, in fact, and say that really it's child, I agree with that definitely, but also there's a victim, isn't there? There is a victim archetype that people can unfortunately fall into. I think when something horrible happens to you, and I suspect pretty much everybody who's listening will have been bullied at one point in their life, when you are bullied, you are a victim at that point, you know. But how long you stay in that victim mindset actually is a personal choice and I think dictates future happenings for you because it can be quite easy to be seen as a victim and then people to treat you differently and for, you know, for the whole kind of wealth and for you to start to behave in a different way, really, and because you're in that victim mindset, really. So we do need to help people. We need to empower people. And that is when we say, take the emotion out of it. Let's see, what is this? What happened? So that we're really clear about why did you feel the way you felt about what happened? what is that telling you about what's going on for you inside? And that's where you're getting down to the really deep kind of cognitive behavioral elements of all of our interactions, really, because our thoughts, our feelings, and our behaviors are all intimately connected, aren't they? And they're actually really influenced by our core beliefs. So to help people stand up and challenge inappropriate behavior, they need to believe that they are actually worthy of having a great time at work and not being bullied and, you know, enjoying what they do and being appreciated and all of those things. Because when we believe in ourselves in that way, then actually we will be empowered to speak our truth and we won't feel upset about things, particularly because we will have said what we feel and we'll believe the positive aspects of things, and then our behaviors will be different. And actually, interestingly, what happens then is we probably won't be bullied. You become unbullyable, really. What would you add anything to that, Chrissy?
I just wanted to say that we have a propensity as managers and people who, when somebody comes to us to say that they feel bullied, is to empathize with them and go straight back to where we were when we were in that position. And that tends to keep them in that victim mode because we give so much compassion towards the person and empathy, and it keeps them stuck. And we don't kind of walk them into that, okay, we appreciate, let's give you the what you need to recover from this, and let's walk forward and talk about what the behavior was. But unfortunately, because our emotions get as people helping somebody recover from bullying, our emotions get embroiled in it as well. We feel for them, and that kind of perpetuates that victim state for them. So I think as managers, we need to be able to step back from how we feel about a situation, actually just be of use to the person, to be of service to the person who's come to us, and to keep our own emotions out of it so that we can move them into a more powerful position.
This is such a rich topic. We've touched on the drama triangle now there, and I don't think we've got time to unpack that fully. However, listeners, www.healthandself.care, page 78 of the book, Jill Edwards' analysis of the drama triangle may help us on that. I love what you say, Chrissy and Karen, about self-belief. And I met someone recently who said, I get up every morning and I say, I love my life. Wow, what a way to start the day, because some of us get up and think, oh God, not another shitty day. Well, of course, according to the universal law, upstairs will hear, I love my life. All right, well, you're going to get a positive day, or, oh, not another shitty day. Well, that's not what we were going to deliver you, but I'm very sorry if that's what you're asking. So I suppose what I'd like to ask you in our last few minutes, we're all doing outer journey of experiences in life. We're all doing this outer journey, whatever roles we're playing. How about the inner work that we have to do alongside that? And where does that fit into today's topic?
So the inner work needs to be happening all the time, actually. Like the person you were talking to who says that every day, because we do need to be reminded, don't we, that we're worthy. I think that many of us have deep underlying core beliefs of not being good enough and not being worthy of a good life. And that is fundamentally untrue. But we need to redress that for ourselves. And we need to say, we need to believe that we are worthy of an amazing life, because we all are. And when we believe that, so your friend that says to themselves, I love my life, what he does is he gives himself a dose of positive body chemistry just by saying those words, doesn't he, out loud, and hearing them and thinking about the good things that he has in his life. And then that positive body chemistry influences his thoughts through the day and the things that he does. And our thoughts, our feelings, and our behavior manifest the outcomes around us. So when we go to work in a positive frame of mind, actually we have a good day because we make a good day. If we go to work thinking, well, I know it's going to be a dreadful day, I know that something awful is going to happen today, our thoughts and our behaviors actually push us down that route, don't they? And we manifest a negative outcome for ourselves. So we definitely, and in bullying, that happens absolutely, because we might change our behavior with a colleague that then fundamentally opens us up to becoming a victim of a person who might not be on a path to enlightenment and might be prepared to pick on somebody or try and make somebody do their work because they're a bit lazy. And so definitely we can manifest things for ourselves in both a positive and a negative way.
I love your idea that we can become unbullyable. I think that's really important. And it's a little bit dated now, but Rudyard Kipling's, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating. That idea of us having an inner locus of control and not being dependent on other people's judgments of us. Is that still relevant 100 years on?
100% relevant. I think we all need to. It's at the time, one of the maxims over the temple at Delphi, isn't it? Around, or was it Epictetus? Or it's about know thyself anyway.
Know thyself.
That's something I've ever thought. Yeah, know thyself. So we've known this since ancient Greece, that actually you are responsible for your own responses. And if you can go out into the world with all your triggers present and decide not to be triggered, then who can touch you? Who can upset you? Who can bother you? You decide that you are not upset. That ultimately makes it a superpower, isn't it? And I think that's what we all need to work towards.
If you can treat those triumph and disaster, those two imposters, just the same and not be moved. And, you know, we are coming back to Delphi, the universal laws, the universal law of reflection, the universal law of attraction, and the universal law of manifestation, which are in an extremely good book, How to Rise, which we'll put in the show notes. We all need to remember these, because these are appealing to values. These are appealing to the human conditions. These are helping us understand why life works, how it works, what makes us tick. And we used that phrase inner work just a few minutes ago. Karen, what would you say inner work was? What is inner work?
It's about self-awareness. It's about being conscious of every thought, every feeling, and everything that you do. Yep. So people say, you made me feel, or they made me feel. But actually, our thoughts, our feelings, and our behaviors are all choices. And if we can make conscious choices, make conscious positive choices in our thoughts, our feelings, and our behaviors, then actually we will manifest amazing things for ourselves. And if we can even better get to those deep underlying core beliefs that we hold about ourselves and make those positive, then again, actually, that will influence our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors in a positive way and manifest positive outcomes for us.
What a great note to end on. I think we're up to time. Karen, thank you so much. Chrissy, is there anything else you'd like to add? And Peter, anything else you'd like to say?
I'd like to say to people, if you're triggered by something and something bothers you, say thank you to the universe, because it's a pointer as to where you can work. And then you never have to be triggered by it again if you do the work, and we can clear our emotional stuff from the past and all our baggage, and then anything that comes in, we make ourselves hollow and we clear it all. And then you don't have to use the energy by being bothered by the way that people behave, and weave tools into your day as well. Be present, be clear, be mindful, do all that stuff, and spend time on your well-being, because that's the thing we neglect, and that's the one thing that we need.
Thank you.
And I think I'd just like to add my thanks to both of you for a fascinating 30 minutes. Although the topic was bullying, actually, I think we've covered much wider things about behavior in general. And I discovered that I had a superpower I didn't know I had. So thank you both for that revelation.
Our pleasure. Absolutely.
Thank you very much indeed for coming. And thank you, everybody who's listened. Go well.